Hey everyone, welcome. It's Stunt Cranny Audio. This is going to be the asshole edition. This is me, Jeremy, and with me for these editions of the show is Eric, who is now last nameless. He is just Eric from now on. So good afternoon slash evening, Mr. Eric.
Is that because I'm such a diva because I eat salads from Hardee's?
Yeah. Well, since you brought it up, now we're out to protect the identity of the people that have legitimate jobs. So like Dusty Diebink and Jeremy Mays don't have anything to worry about. Maybe Kevin does, but no one in his place understands what wrestling is anyway, so it's not that big of a deal. So so a hearty salad, huh?
A hearty salad.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like cooking anything for myself tonight. And by cooking anything, I mean putting like pre-grilled chicken patties in the microwave, or stirring together tuna and mayonnaise. So I thought, you know what, fuck it. I sent in my change of address.
Tuna and mayonnaise? And I can't interrupt with a tuna and mayonnaise joke? Seriously?
No opening. Literally.
This isn't the weekend. Jesus.
So, yeah, as I'm running for mayor of Bangtown, when I sent in my change of address form to the United States Postal Service, it apparently got to the Hardee's in the neighborhood by my house. And Hardee's, I guess, I don't know if every Hardee's does this, but I got one from this place. I actually got one a few years ago when I moved to my first house in Iowa City, a voucher for a free meal. Hardee's doesn't have any fucking thing even remotely healthy. It's all disgusting. It's all greasy. And you know about grease. It's fucking just gross. Everything they put out, everything they advertise, every single new burger is more disgusting than the previous one. And they flaunt it. I mean, the shit just falls out of the paper in the commercials, and it lands on a hooker's lap, and fucking somebody rides a bowl, and there's corners of cheese on the paper. And I just got back from the gym. I don't want to deal with that shit. So I look on their menu online in advance, and I'm like, okay, the hot ham and cheese is the healthiest sandwich, which is a fucking crock of shit, I'm sure. It's as healthy as a fucking Denny's waitress is pretty. And then for sides, of course I don't want fries, but they have a salad. I'm like, okay, I've been burned by fast food salads before, but I'll give this a shot, whatever. So, yeah, I roll up into Hardee's today. I go inside because I don't want to have to go through this rigmarole and drive through. The guy who helped me out was the fucking spitting image of the human tornado. And you have no idea how bad I wanted to say something to him. But, A, I
sure
figured he'd be offended. Yeah, no, I don't. I know he's retired, but he's not fucking just incredible working at Olive Garden. I'm pretty sure Craig Williams is not working at the Hardee's in Colesville, Iowa. B, there's no way that he knew would know who the human tornado was. And C, I didn't want the fucking ghost of Bruce Mitchell appearing out of nowhere telling me that I was being racially insensitive. So I asked to swap out my fries for salad. The guy was amenable, and I got my food. And it wasn't too bad, and it was free, so fuck it. Who cares what I ate? It was free.
You went, just for review, Eric went to the most unhealth conscious, is that even the correct way of saying it?
Sure.
Fast food joint possible. I don't think there can possibly be a worse one. Some place is called Carl's Jr., in case you don't know that.
Right.
The guy, he was just on an episode of Bullshit where they were talking about fast food.
Yep.
And he even said that basically to sum up him was, we don't care. We make the food, we don't make you eat it. I was like,
yeah,
God bless you. That's exactly what it should be like. So Eric went to the absolute worst fast food place possible for health. Unless, you know, someone may want to bring up Taco Bell, but we don't speak of such ill things. And ordered a salad. I can't imagine what the human tornado would have actually done to you. If you would have gone to the grocery.
He would have dunked a basketball and given me a Frankensteiner on the way down.
I mean, God damn. I just couldn't imagine the look on his face. But dude, we deep fry like tomatoes here. What do you want a salad for? I mean, and just like I was telling you, dude, the lettuce there first has all the preservatives and whatever else that everyone tries to tell you is bad for you.
Right.
And then it's going to soak up the grease in the air. So,
I would like to see the person who comes in there in line, who's standing in line after me. Here's me finally stand up to the monolith that is Hardee's ordering a salad, and they're like, I would also like a salad, but only if it's organically grown vegetables. At which point, even I get offended and point out where the fucking co-op is. It's about 10 blocks down the road, hippie.
I mean, and in the spirit of over-exaggerating this, I just get a picture of you like Michael Moore outside of, like, GM's headquarters with a bullhorn yelling, I want a salad instead of fries or substitute salad, sir. Wow.
Salad forever. French fries never. That's for our Simpsons fans out there.
Okay. Let's just get into NXT. Oh, Jesus. You totally blew my mind with the salad forever and French fries never thing. I don't know why. I think it's because I'm still sitting here in like a Zaxby's coma. So
yeah, what did you say you had? Chicken strips and fries with ranch?
Oh, God damn, dude. They're chicken fingers with French fries and ranch dressing. And it's just, I know you can get away with this stuff if you don't eat it all the time. So I'm not going to be one of those assholes.
Sure.
But I just know, you just know when you go in there and you eat it, you're not helping yourself at all. And it tastes delicious, but it just isn't good for you. And fighting that war before we even started recording this just reminded me of how much I've gotten away from eating that sort of stuff. So,
oh, man. Were you a married with children person when it was on?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember the episode where there's the trainer guy, he had his own TV show, and he had a contest, and Peggy won the contest, so the trainer came over to the house to train them? And
yes.
Yeah, and she turned him into a cigarette-smoking bonbon eater. And then the first healthy thing that he ate, or whatever it was, he ended up having a fucking heart attack and dying. And then they dedicated the show to our brother, the cockroach. So if you ever hear me say that in regards to Jake the Snake Roberts, the only thing left after nuclear war will be Jake Roberts and our brother, the cockroach. That's from that episode.
Jake Roberts,
Married with Children. But that's what your situation made me think of. No, you can't have that every day. You can have that some days, but when you only have that once in a while, yeah, you really start to have to reflect on your dietary habits. And if you don't reflect on them, your fucking asshole will make you reflect on them.
Yeah, I'm going with two of those today. So, all right, let's get some wrestling talk.
You know what's fun to do in Dayton, Ohio? Pack up and get the fuck out of there.
Yeah, we can get into that later. I'll try to shoehorn it in somehow.
Okay.
All right, so let's talk NXT since I just got done watching it, so it's fresh in my mind, and since you're the NXT guru for the fight. I guess, what do you think of the episode first, just overall?
Overall, I did not think it was one of the stronger episodes. I think mostly because they foreshadowed the obstacle course, which just made me instinctively roll my eyes. Oh, great, it's going to be another one of those shows. And I spent the next hour trying to rationalize the idea of having a challenge for immunity, because immunity is, it's a staple of reality TV, and I know that's kind of the angle they're shooting for here, even though it's completely scripted. I still couldn't rationalize it that way. And then I got to thinking, well, if they wanted to do immunity, why don't they have a battle royal like every other week? But then that would get old, and all battle royals really are punches and kicks. But then, like, does that put the impetus on the writers to make it more interesting than that? And then it becomes a show about the writing and the booking and not the wrestlers and the competition. The wrestling itself wasn't great. Alex Riley's match only lasted a minute, so that stunk. The best part, the good thing about this show is the same good thing as the first few episodes of American Idol, the tryout edition. Listening to these guys talk for 60 seconds when they have no place talking at all can be hilarious.
Yeah.
So I would put my
thumb. I think that's the first thing we need to get into. Yeah.
Oh well, I would put my thumb slightly down, if we're talking like from 6 p.m. to 12 midnight. I'd put my thumb somewhere around like 8 o'clock, because I knew it was going to be terrible because of the obstacle course. It turned out the wrestling wasn't all that great, but it had some entertaining points to it.
Yeah. All right. Now here's the thing. I think there's another way you may look at it too. In our eyes, that show is a 10.
Mm-hmm.
Because it had a lot of comedy, a lot of stuff for us to nitpick and get all over. But I think what you're giving is the average viewer score. You know,
right.
A thumb in the middle, thumb slightly down. Now, going with a Stone Granny perspective on it, I enjoyed this show to no end. Only because I was like, oh my God, we get to talk about this tonight. This is going to be the easiest show ever. I mean, I know, and Kevin always gets on, he doesn't get on, but he always talks whenever we listen to East Coast Audio. Kevin, you know how he gets, he's a stickler for like time and stuff.
Yeah.
He goes, they had an hour and 20 minute show on a show that's only an hour. And I'm like, yeah, well, you know, they took our place basically. I mean, Jesus Christ. The first 15 minutes of the show last week, they didn't even talk about wrestling, I don't think. So, you know, obviously I'm going to cut him slack. There's so much in the show that was just right.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we never do good talk about positive things. So let's start with a positive, and
sure.
I'll throw this one out there. See if you agree. The I hate saying evolution, but I'm going to use it anyway. The evolution of Husky Harris.
Mm-hmm.
From episode 1 to last night is probably the biggest surprise to me. Because to me, he flubbed his lines, and that really sucked. And I know, I think, and when in your NXT review or blog, you talk about how, you know, that's not a good idea to just blow off the, you know, how you screwed your lines up. But I thought it fit his character. It's like, whatever. Just kind of like just blow it off. Like, I'm still better than you guys. So,
right.
I can flub a line, and I'm still going to come off better than you guys. And then when he got in the ring, they clearly see something in him.
Because they gave him, well, and this isn't exactly the greatest way of looking at it, but they gave him a T-shirt already. And I know Lucky Cannon's got one, but you can go down to the local screen printer and get that shit done for $10. Like,
yeah, I could probably.
That's how much they don't cost.
I could tell you what font it is. Probably it's the same font that's on our Hold for Swank shirt.
Well, that's got to be a pretty good font then.
Yeah,
you like how I did that, didn't you?
Yeah, thanks.
But no, and then they don't have. They don't have Cody Rhodes ripping him anymore. And not saying he treats them like an equal, but he treats them almost on par, and then which is really what a lot of the pros do. But then he pins MVP and looks cocky doing it, and then, like, you know, got up taunting the crowd as he should. And then the obstacle course, when he just barreled through the last obstacle, and was the only guy that did legitimate push-ups, then pops up, runs across the entire balance beam like it's nothing. And then, you know, he kind of tries to jack up the garbage can at the end, but whatever, or whatever that thing was at the end. But all of that, to me, going back to the beginning segment where Cody Rhodes was like, you know, he's a, what the hell was it? He's a Mack truck with a Ferrari engine. Is that what it was? Something like that?
Right. Or an army tank with a Ferrari engine.
They proved the point. Yeah, I mean, they proved the point, to me at least.
Yeah.
And it all comes from a guy, but it comes from a guy who carries himself like he doesn't care because he knows how good he is already. And it doesn't, to me, it doesn't seem unnatural at all.
Okay, a couple points. A, I like Cody Rhodes doing what he's doing. Rather than running down Husky Harris specifically, I like the fact that he ran down the crowd and then equated Husky Harris to the crowd. So it's kind of backhanded, but he's, like, slowly coming around, is the way it seems to me. So that's cool coming from Cody Rhodes, who, by the way, is
I don't watch SmackDown, but I'm going to guess then. I think I saw SmackDown last weekend for the first time in a couple months. I guarantee you Cody Rhodes is the best thing happening on SmackDown right now. So it's cool that Husky is starting to get the stamp of approval from Cody Rhodes.
I don't know what I think of what you call the evolution of Husky Harris, and that's kind of a two-part thing. Like, I've always taken his attitude to be that I don't care, I'm still better than everybody, slash, like I always call him, high school bully sort of attitude. But from another perspective, wrestling-wise, when he had that singles match a couple weeks ago, he was not good, and he blew up, and he was sloppy, and he had a tag match before that where he was good. He had a tag match this week where he was good. So he's showing glimpses of being good, possibly being good, if he can just tighten this up, get his line straight. And see, that's the thing. Like, there would be things within the context of matches. Like, you know, maybe it's planned out that he misses an elbow drop but hits the second one or something like that. Or, I don't know, misses the elbow drop, goes for another one, the guy tries to move and he fucking rakes his boot against the guy's eyes or something like that. And then just, shrugs it off. Like, well, I fucked up the first time, but I got him the second time. Things like that to show that you're cocky would be good. But I really think that, you know, if Kevin Dunn went back and watched this episode of NXT and saw a wrestler cutting a promo where he tried to sell himself and be serious, which selling yourself in turn sells tickets ideally, screwed up and then was just like, whatever. I don't think Kevin Dunn, the executive producer of the show, would be happy about that. I don't think the script writers for Raw and SmackDown would see a guy who could potentially mess up a promo on live TV and then laugh it off like he didn't do anything wrong as a positive thing. But I think he's got to get his mind right when it comes to that stuff. And if he's not taking it seriously, he absolutely has to take it seriously. If he thinks that he's doing it as part of his character, then there needs to be an agent or a producer or an executive producer or a McMahon or an H or somebody to come in there and say, look, that's cute, but that should not be your character. Your character shouldn't be laughing off fuck-ups, like obvious mistakes. You can fluff off things within context, but not the way you just did. He's a diamond in the rough. He's the dark horse of this show. And somebody, I can't remember who it was, somebody online said something about, I think Husky Harris will be the first to go, or I think he should be. I'm like, absolutely not. Even in the context of NXT, he shouldn't be the next to go. He'll probably be eliminated because somebody like Alex Riley is going to win anyway, which is fine. But Husky Harris will have a job in WWE someday. He just needs to get his head on straight.
Yeah. But we can't. All right. But wouldn't like a decent producer, though? And speaking of Kevin Dunn, just go, all right, at least he didn't just blow it off like, whatever. He kept it in the context of his character, though. Kind of like, you guys get the point. Instead of, like, breaking character going, well. I mean, kind of like John Morrison did later when Eli Cottonwood was a stumbling fool all over the place.
Yeah.
And you see Morrison on the stage of, it's like, motherfucker, that's your guy. I mean, you shouldn't be laughing. You should be irritated or show, like, empathy or sympathy for the guy. Like, hey, you tried your best. Instead, Morrison comes there like, yeah, he's a big fucking goob.
Which is the second time that he's done that in I don't know how many weeks. When Cottonwood cut that terrible promo, I think it was, and they cut to Morrison, who was hiding his face behind his clipboard. You're right.
Yeah.
He shouldn't be the one laughing out loud. And if he is, if he feels the need to, he really needs to stifle it. Because this, the whole gimmick of the show, they need to keep working it, is the pros are looking out for their rookies, you know. It was okay for me when William Regal made fun of The Miz because Bryan Danielson really was better than The Miz. Stuff kind of off the cuff like that is funny. It works. It doesn't hurt anybody really because Miz is going to overcome that anyway. But, yeah, when your own pro is laughing at you, that's not good.
Yeah, but Morrison also, I guess we're getting away from Husky Harris, but that's fine because now we can get into stuff that we actually enjoy.
Yeah,
but then again, they showed Morrison doing something. It was like a still shot or something was going on, and they did the crane camera. They swung by the pros, and John Morrison looks in the camera and starts like fake writing down something. then he like bumps Kofi Kingston and goes, "Hey, look what I just wrote." I mean, just like literally, just like I said that, like with the head, like the over exaggerated head thing, and then he like looks in the camera again and starts laughing, like, "Oh."
Well,
he's stupid. You're breaking. I mean, essentially, he's breaking character.
Well, here's the catch: is that John Morrison doesn't know anything about pro wrestling. John Morrison's a fucking idiot and a douchebag who goes into the ring and half-asses it and goes through the motions that he's capable of going through, throws punches like a fucking woman, can't cut a promo to save his goddamn life and wouldn't sell a fucking ticket if he fucking offered $100.
He did again, too. Yeah.
And he does shit like this.
I mean, he did that again this week, too.
What's that? The terrible promo?
And again, not a horrible promo, but it wasn't good. I mean, for a pro, all right. Maybe looking into this a little too much, all right. But the thing to me is, you're going to goof on a guy that can't talk, which clearly isn't this guy's strong suit yet. But yet he says something. Damn, I wish I could remember the exact wording. But he was like, talking about something about waffle, just something stupid like that. And he like gave a little smirk, like, "Oh, how clever I am."
Uh-huh.
I was like, "What the fuck? You're not clever at all." You came up with Dusto platypus and asparagus or whatever the week before or 2 weeks ago, and then today you're talking about it like something. I really wish I could remember the damn quote.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, but Morrison, I mean, as much as NXT the first season I think helped Miz, because he had a foil, like a solid foil behind it,
yeah,
with Bryan Danielson. In this case, just nothing. I mean, the pairing of Cottonwood and Morrison should have been fun, where Morrison's like, "Oh my God, I have no idea what to teach you because I'm the high flyer guy and you're just a
monster."
Right. Well, yeah, you know, so to speak. But instead, it's just like, "Yeah, he's a fucking goof. He ain't going to win. I'm going to goof off on stage when I should be at the hotel." Or,
see, that's just,
you know, I'm on Raw. I shouldn't be here anyways.
Right. Morrison doesn't get it. I don't. The best thing, the only thing that he could ever attempt to do on his own was to give himself that nickname Red Hot Johnny Blaze. And that wouldn't have fucking drawn a fucking, that wouldn't have drawn a fucking dime with a fucking stencil. This guy, he just, I don't know. I bitched about him so much last week, I think I blew my load. He seriously, he'll never main event WrestleMania. He'll never cut a money-making promo. He'll never be in a money-making feud. Yeah, and he doesn't understand that he's not on when the red light is on. He's on when he walks, like, before he gets through the curtain. And then he does shit like that. He sees, "Oh, camera's on there, burp, burp, burp," you know, and then he tries to play it fucking cool. And I'm sure he's not doing it for his friends, because a guy like that doesn't have any friends. Yeah, he needs to stop
being I'm going to disagree. I think that's the exact reason he's doing it. I think he was just trying to get Kofi Kingston to laugh. And be like, "Hey, look at my fucking funny face." You know, it.
Yeah.
No, it. I was just shocked when I saw it, and then just kind of like, well, that's why you're on a team for John Cena instead of a singles match, which I don't know which is worse. But, and I think the other funny thing is how they're still trying to get over Eli Cottonwood as a monster.
Right.
That whole thing with him talking and him going, "Who are you voting for, Matt Stryker?"
Right.
And even Matt Stryker just kind of like half-assed, like, "Okay, I'll vote for you." I'm like, whatever.
Yeah, it was too little too late for Eli Cottonwood. He's had 7 weeks now to portray himself as a monster, and all he's been is a goon for 6 weeks. Now all of a sudden he's got some sort of attitude. I don't buy it.
Yeah, and we're not looking at a Skip Sheffield sort of sudden change, you know.
Right.
See, I mean, that was really it for Cottonwood. Him doing half of his push-ups outside the square kind of cracked me up.
And then he had to go, and then he was disqualified, and then he flipped shit, which was actually, that was okay with me. Some of the things that they did last night, some of the things they did last night that forced the wrestlers to improvise, I thought was good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah.
trying to think what else was on the show. What else is on there? I don't want to go over all NXT point by point, but just trying to bring up the things I thought were funny or good.
Sure.
Percy Watson was good, but what I mean, he's been the same. They tried adding another layer to him, but it's still the same Percy Watson. So it's like, okay, you work fine, so just leave it alone.
Right.
I don't like the fact he wasn't wrestling with his glasses on. That really bugged me for some reason.
Yeah, that's, you know, the more I thought about that, I didn't think about it in that he wasn't wearing his glasses. I was thinking last night about the day that WWE has a main event for WrestleMania of insert wrestler A, Randy Orton or John Cena or somebody like that, versus Showtime Percy Watson wearing glasses. And I can't imagine that's ever going to happen, but it's such a good gimmick that you got to keep working it, especially now. You know, you're only 7 weeks into this show. Keep working that gimmick so that when you do get rid of your glasses, then it actually means something. But, you know, establish yourself now. You're not going to establish yourself completely in 6 weeks.
Yeah.
I say keep working that gimmick until the absolute last possible minute, and then we'll all be heartbroken when you get rid of your glasses instead of just like, ugh, that was kind of weird.
Yeah. I guess we could have brought this at the same time, but when Caval, it was really a promo-heavy show because of the cuts.
Yeah.
How weird was it when Michael Cole and Josh Matthews are both quiet, and Michael Cole he doesn't even say it under his breath.
Yeah.
He just goes, that was terrible.
Well,
I
agree.
Oh, you're being a douchebag. Yeah, I mean, but you couldn't get out and go, oh, you're a douchebag. No, that was awful. And then Josh Matthews starts making fun of what he said when they were running around when he started the obstacle course, and I'm like, wow. I mean, Josh Matthews usually sticks up for the IndyCard guys.
Right.
That way.
Yep.
Even he was goofing on him. So it's like, wow, that really kind of blew up on him.
Well, the thing that seems nice about this show, and obviously Michael Cole has taken it to a level that he's never taken it to before. They're being told things in their headset, I'm sure. But it seems like they're able to, the announcers, especially Michael Cole, are able to take those things and run with them a little bit further. It was obvious to everybody that Caval's promo was terrible. And I'm sure somebody said that over the headset. That was terrible, you know. And the idea being that Cole is the guy who hates the independent darlings, so make fun of this promo. Well, it was compounded by the fact that it really was terrible. So Cole was able to say it with a lot more vitriol than usual. You know, he wasn't acting when he said it. I mean, he knows how good Daniel Bryan is, Bryan Danielson in real life. And I'm sure he knows how good Caval is low-key in real life. But when you hear a promo that terrible and then you're told to say so and you feel like you've got free enough rein to go with it a little further, you could hear genuinely in his voice that promo is terrible. And it was, and Josh Matthews, I think, took it upon himself to agree because it was. Josh Matthews being kind of the voice of the fans, well, why lie to your fans? You know, you could either sweep it under the rug or, you know, fuck it. Call the guy out. And why not? Because you've been employed by WWE a hell of a lot longer than Caval has. So if you feel the need to kind of, you know, jab him a little bit and be like, yeah, dude, that was really terrible. I don't know if you think that you're helping your case with WWE management by playing this workaday sort of wrestler. I am proud of myself.
That's exactly what it was.
Blah, blah, blah. He was seriously, I mean, there's pandering, and then there's just generic.
Yep.
And that's what he was. And Loki can't do generic. He's got to be himself. So he's trying to do himself right by management. You know what? Fuck that.
Yeah.
Cut your promo, and then you won't have to worry about the Vince McMahon in the headset saying, tell him it was terrible.
Right. Here's the other thing. It sounds like he was selling cars. If you would like to hear me fight Rey Mysterio. And I'm like, what the fuck is this guy doing?
Yeah.
And to me, that almost seemed like the safe play. And I know we treat this as real, but it's almost like he knows he's going to end up one or two. It's clear he's going to, because the fans are going to vote him. So he doesn't have to go out of his way to do anything special. Because, I mean, let's face it, with the fan voting, if the fan voting is legit, it's going to come down to him and Percy Watson. I don't think there's any doubt it's going to be those two.
Yep.
Because they're not going to vote for Harris. They're not going to vote for Riley.
They're sure not going to vote for next week.
Well, no. Oh, God, no. But then, but maybe they would vote for Lucky Cannon.
Now, he actually
he
gets more than a smattering of booze, Lucky Cannon does. He won't.
Yeah.
The fans would forget him before they'd vote for him.
Right. But then there's also the other guy.
Michael McGillicuddy.
It's actually fitting. Michael McGillicuddy.
Uh-huh.
He's done nothing for me. I actually think he gets worse every week. I just don't see anything right now. And I think Cody Rhodes nailed it perfectly when he said, you're going to see ruthless aggression, and you come out doing drop kicks, sunset flips, and leapfrogs.
Uh-huh.
And then asked Cocky while he's kissing up to the audience, and I was like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah, the first thing out of his mouth for his promo last night was, I am good, I should be the next. You don't say that when you're a babyface. It's okay to call yourself the toughest SOB or the most electrifying man once you've gotten that over as a heel and the crowd eats it up. When you're Michael McGillicuddy, brand new rookie, your dad's Mr. Perfect and everybody remembers him and how cocky he was, and you're that cocky, but they're pushing you as a babyface, it just doesn't mesh and the crowd's going to shit on it anyway. You hope that they'll at least turn on you so they have some sort of reaction toward you, but they're like dangerously close to the fans shitting on it. I said it in my blog and I said it before too. His look is generic. He needs something else to do with his hair besides just comb it and gel it downward. His facial hair is generic too. He's 6'3", 260, generic build. His tights look stupid. I don't care if he looks more like a cartoon character. Give him his dad's fucking multicolored singlet. Just as a start, just one little thing that they could do.
I think he'd look retarded. He'd look like an absolute jobber in a singlet, though.
Possibly.
He would be Barry Horowitz. Just put the big handprint on the back. He'd be Barry Horowitz. With shorter hair.
What does he look like in the tights that he wears now? He looks like he took fucking Aku's old tights and cut the legs off of them.
I totally agree with you. No, I totally agree. I don't think there's a workable look for him.
Maybe he's not.
Always going to look plain.
Yeah. It's possible. He might need more of a tan. I don't know. Whatever. Take some fucking steroids and add said 20 pounds to your build.
God damn you. I was just going to say that. Run up a little bit. Get puffy like your dad. Grow your hair out like your dad. And then, you know, just get suspended routinely and fired for being lazy. So there's nothing wrong with that.
I don't know. I see something in him, but I can't put my finger on it. Like I said in my blog, I know he's cocky because he shows it, which means that I can tell he'd be a good heel, but there's got to be more than just that. There have to be more intangibles.
Yeah.
I don't see that sparkle in his eye like I saw with his dad. You can, if you put on a DVD, I guarantee you, if you had somebody over at your house hanging out that didn't watch wrestling, maybe knew who Hulk Hogan and Steve Austin were, but was willing to let you put in a DVD for like 5 minutes, and you put in a Mr. Perfect match,
mm-hmm.
and if you could find a good way, a logical way to ask their opinion of this guy, I mean, if you led them to this answer, to answer this way, they could at least say that he looked like he was having a good time in the ring, that he looked like he belonged in professional wrestling. Because he had that twinkle in his eye. He was always smiling and fucking, you know, whatever he did, he was always smiling, and he and Bobby Heenan look like they're having a fucking blast. With Michael McGillicuddy, I don't see that natural charisma coming out of
him. They're having a blast backstage, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So.
yep.
Yeah. No, that's probably the most I've ever thought of Michael McGillicuddy was right then.
Yeah.
All right, let's move away from WWE and NXT for a little bit.
All right.
this is my fault, so just be prepared. TNA had their ECW, which apparently they may be called EZ2, faction.
Which actually sounds more like an ingredient that Rachel Ray would use.
Like
EVOO,
it sounds like an oxygen bar.
Yeah.
So that happened. And then this week, something else happens with them. I mean, I don't know. I don't have the energy to care about what TNA does right now. But then they force these things upon me, and I'm taking it personally, that there's actually hard justice. They're going to redo almost an entire ECW reunion event.
Mm-hmm.
They're bringing in, I mean, they're talking to, I mean, look at all the guys they brought in. I mean, they had Al Snow involved, Simon Diamond, or Pat Kenny, whatever they're going to call him. They had him involved. Because, you know, there's a huge faction of people out there going, what happened to Simon Diamond?
Right.
So this is from ProWrestling.net. This is Jason Powell, and it says, the .net has confirmed reports that the main event of the Hard Justice pay-per-view will be Rob Van Dam versus Jerry Lynn.
Yeah. Okay. Let's just dissect this. I'll start. Jerry Lynn had a... Okay, let's go all the way back to March of 1999. I'm pretty sure it was the March and May pay-per-views, but it might have been the May and July pay-per-views. So pardon me if I'm off in my timeline by a couple months. But I think it started with March. Bear with me if it didn't. And Jerry Lynn gets a TV title shot against Rob Van Dam. And the match goes to a 20-minute draw, and it was great. It was phenomenal. I thought it was awesome. It was 99, so, you know, what are you stuck with elsewhere? Steve Blackman in WWE, fucking 99. God, Jeff Jarrett and goddamn Kevin Nash in WCW and horseshit like that, right? And Prince Iaukea and goddamn Bill DeMott and stupid shit. Chuck Palumbo.
Oh, my God, Prince Iaukea. Wow.
Yeah. Yep, sorry. So, in ECW, you've got this semi-main event match. Rob Van Dam, who everybody loved, the TV title, at the time, like, working his way up to being the longest reigning champion in ECW, versus Jerry Lynn, a guy who'd been around for years and years and years, fucking tore things up with Lightning Kid back in the day in Minnesota, then went down to Global, took his act down there, been around the world. And they put on a fantastic match, went to a draw, they asked for a continuation and went 5 extra minutes. I think RVD won. And then backstage, they're like, yeah. RVD's like, you know what, no one normally does this. I'm the champion, but I want to wrestle Jerry Lynn again or something like that. I haven't watched the tapes in a while. And they have a rematch 2 months later on pay-per-view. Phenomenal. Countering counters and kicking out of this and near falls here and playing off the first match. Another 20-25-minute match. Fantastic. 4 stars. Or more. Whatever. Fast forward. That was 99. So fast forward 11 years. Okay? Since then, Rob Van Dam had a decent career, but not entirely remarkable. And the best thing that happened to him, holding 2 championship belts at once in WWE, he fucked it up by taking drugs and hanging out with Sabu. Jerry Lynn hasn't done a goddamn fucking thing since then that anybody has given a fucking rat's ass about unless they write for Online World of Wrestling because they feel they need to be a completist. And I appreciate that site because they're the reason that I knew Jerry Lynn hadn't even wrestled in TNA for 3 years. We get this half-crocked ECW invasion angle that Dusty and I bitched about on Friday. The show, I think, was posted Saturday. Check it out if you haven't listened to it yet. RVD now, the TNA world champion that was brought in to be the savior of the company, wins the belt on one of his first nights in the company, something like that, all of a sudden is an extreme invader, okay? So what are they trying to do to sell us on this pay-per-view? 11 years after these two had such great matches with no proof since then that they could possibly live up to that, especially with Jerry Lynn. And I don't care if he's been in Ring of Honor or whatever. They bring in
Ring of Honor. He was the champion. Thank you.
Well, whatever. Yeah, that's like Rhino being an ECW champion in its dying days. So that's what they bring back 11 years later. Rob Van Dam versus Jerry Lynn. The only people who remember that shit were either at ringside when it happened or the people listening to the show right now. In a match that's probably not going to be any good. Jerry Lynn hasn't worked for the fucking company in 3 years. Are they seriously going to put that on the poster and expect it to sell? Is this what they're going to put on their website and expect people to remember? Is this what they're giving the cable companies to put out for advertisements, thinking the cable companies are going to be happy that they're going to get their share of 18,000 buys times $35 or whatever? Fuck that. This is a fucking money loser. And they've got, like, the fucking blueprint for a money loser headlining the card. How much of your thunder did I take?
No, none of it, really. I just, you know how I feel when talking about TNA. And as a company, and I guess I'm not ignoring what you said, but it's just the utter frustration in trying to get a viable second company.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not to compete, but to offer something different and to offer something worth watching is dead. I mean, they're shitting on everybody. Now, all right, this is not announced yet, so let's just be fair about that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They main evented with a guy who apparently has joined the ECW side against the guy that's going to be bringing in that isn't with the company. So think about this. If you're Samoa Joe or AJ Styles or Kazarian, Devin Wolf, I know it's not really fair on that one, but Brutus Magnus, any of these guys, your dumb ass, I almost called it something else, but your boss basically told you, you guys aren't getting it done on your own, so we're going to try and hot shot buy rate, and we're going to do this ECW thing, and then you guys are going to be on the card. Or if you're on the card, you're in a lower position. And you're sitting around going,
whoop, are you still there? Okay. Well, I'm going to interject because we might have just lost Jeremy. So let me postulate on something he just put out there. You've got a roster of TNA guys who do bust their ass, no matter what Dixie Carter says about you guys need to tighten up. They go out there and they bust their ass in front of 400 people on fucking weeknights, which TNA calls a house show, in front of 600, the same 600 people every fucking week at the Universal Studios who don't even pay to come into the show. And she's shitting on them for a rehash of an angle that worked 5 years ago that's not going to work today because nostalgia only has a certain statute, especially when it comes to stuff like this. When it comes to seeing current Tommy Dreamer and current Raven, okay, there's a difference between putting in my old copy of A Matter of Respect from 1996 versus watching Tommy Dreamer and Sandman and people like that wrestle right now. And sorry, that includes the Dudley Boys too. And Dixie Carter is saying, even if she's not going to put them in a lower part, she's saying, you guys aren't doing a good enough job drawing enough money for me. I need to hotshot this thing, which she doesn't realize isn't going to draw any money. She's being fucking hornswoggled into doing this. And if they don't get put lower on the cards, she's saying, Kazarian, it's up to you to carry Tommy Dreamer to a good match. AJ Styles, it's up to you to carry Raven to a good match. Fuck me. I would hate to be them working for this fucking company right now. She doesn't trust them enough anyway. And then she puts them in a position to carry these old fat fuckers. They should be pissed. They should be angry. She might be asking people like Kazarian, who apparently she doesn't trust because they're not working tight enough. Kazarian, you carry Tommy Dreamer to a good match. AJ Styles, you carry Raven to a good match. Jay Lethal, you carry fucking Stevie Richards to a good match, or goddamn Just Incredible or something. So anyway, that's what I had to say.
Yeah.
No, man, I totally see what you're saying. And I just don't understand how this is supposed to help business. And I actually started this over in our old stomping grounds in the Torch, asking a jokingly serious question: have they given up on pay-per-view buys? which is a legitimate source of revenue. You don't give up on that. But
it could be a legitimate source of revenue.
I used to get so irritated. I would just get so irritated, my words would just come out at the same time. So it's like grunt.
Yeah.
I don't understand how you have a business that you're in the business of making money, that you don't want to make money, that you do everything the opposite of making money. And I'm not even talking about Vince Russo here or Hulk Hogan or any of that. This is a blatant, I don't give a fuck what happens move. This is desperation.
It's being that's the thing. It's desperation to make money because it's being sold to Dixie as here's something that worked for WWE 6 years ago in the form of a DVD and 5 years ago in the form of a pay-per-view. And then a year after that in the form of a pay-per-view, it kind of worked. So that's what she's being sold, is the idea that this could be a temporary spike in buy rates, which I know Wade said it. I'm pretty sure Wade said it. If not him, I know somebody did. I'm pretty sure it was Wade, because Wade says this type of stuff all the time. They should be hot-shotting things, but filling up the undercard with stuff that we will want to watch in the future, and hoping that the shit that causes people to order the pay-per-view gets them to watch, but then the stuff on the undercard keeps them interested so that for future shows, they'll be like, hey, I really want to see this Jay Lethal character and what he's got to do. I really want to see Desmond Wolfe, and is he going to end up with Chelsea? Is he going to give her the lariat or whatever? You know, it's not going to happen that way. Desmond Wolfe is going to have to carry fucking Balls Mahoney to a good match, all on a whim, all seriously on Vince Russo and Tommy Dreamer's whim. I'm sure Tommy Dreamer thought of this as soon as he knew that he was going to have Dixie Carter's ear. He's like, God damn it, I'm getting a couple of my buddies a payday. I'm getting me a sweet payday. I'm going to sell it as Dixie getting a payday, and fuck all if we don't draw more than 30,000, which I think is probably still their record buy rate at this point, is 30,000. And that's fucking shameful.
Yeah, and definitely because they hot-shotted that thing and destroyed the business of it.
Uh-huh.
Imagine how much more they could have done if they wouldn't have blown Joe Angle immediately.
Right.
Just kept them separate, kept them like two sharks, just circling like the same prey, same victim.
Yeah.
And then they finally just butt heads, and it's like, oh my God, they finally butted heads. So you can get 40,000 buys. And I know it's only 10,000, but it's still 10,000 more.
Yeah. Which they definitely need.
This wasn't supposed to turn into a TNA bash thing, but it's just funny the wrestlers that they're talking to as well. They put feelers out to Johnny Swinger.
Ugh.
And I think what I said before, because there's a real groundswell of Johnny Swinger supporters and people who are going, whatever happened to Johnny Swinger? I mean, no one, that I guarantee you, that hasn't been thought in at least 470,000 years.
Oh, dude, what? I mean, are they going to bring back the Rockin' Rebel? You know, are they going to fucking... So he was around in, like, 94. You know, are they going to bring back Salvatore Bellomo from episode 1? Are they going to fucking try to call up Easy Money? No. Why would you do that? Why? Just because Pat Kenny is around, and just because he teamed up with Johnny... As Chris Jericho called him at Slamboree 98, Johnny Singer? Swinger? Yeah, that's him. That's who they're bringing back.
Yeah. And then they tried talking to Roadkill, and he wanted nothing to do with them. And then I was like, if you're going to hit a Roadkill, why aren't you hitting Danny Garino?
Right.
He's alive, right? Okay.
I think so.
Well, I mean, that's not all that. That's not an unfair question for some of these guys.
No,
so,
you're right.
But it's just funny. Yeah. I mean, you're not hearing Sabu's name brought up. Sandman's name's not being brought up unless they're going to bring him in as a surprise people. It's like, ugh. There's no chance I'm buying this pay-per-view, which isn't saying much. But it's like sometimes there's like a couple matches where I'm like, that would be interesting to buy. In this case, there's not a chance. There isn't one ECW oldie that you could bring back that I'd want to watch.
Nope. They have the one that they that I would have. You know, if this would have been the time that they would have unearthed Rob Van Dam, that would have been something. He's already around, and now they're about to completely botch him.
Yeah. I also noticed that Lance Storm's name isn't being brought up at all.
Right.
So, who else? Masato Tanaka, they could bring in. Tajiri, maybe. But
sure.
Those are guys I would like to see, but I wouldn't pay to see them.
Sure, I mean, Super Crazy, Tajiri, and Little Guido could do another international three-way dance, you know, if you really want to bring back the Living Dangerously pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or thank
Taka,
you. I bring in... you guys, man.
Yeah.
The whole thing's a sham. Maybe you could resurrect dead guys. Maybe bring back Mike Awesome. Maybe both of the Eliminators. Shane Douglas.
Both
you know,
of Public Enemy.
Kind of
wait a minute.
Sandman Bigelow.
Yeah, Shane Douglas isn't dead now. Wait a minute.
He's, you know, he works the parking lot of Target.
Yeah,
you
he's
at least
cleaning up.
Incredible is going and getting, like, at least Justin Credible is learning how to cook, regardless if it's Olive Garden or not. So, yeah.
Okay, just off air. So, Jeremy and I are talking about shit on IM earlier today. And I put that post up about Justin Credible, and Kevin at least gave me props for using the never-ending pasta bowl line, which, by the way, I had myself laughing until I cried at work today. I shouldn't admit that, but I was so proud of myself. And of all the fucking things that you say, you all of a sudden start taking up for Justin Credible, and he said, well... Yeah, he might be working at Olive Garden, but blah, blah, blah. I just shut off after that. I'm like, who the fuck did you stand up
incredible? No. I had a legitimate point, and my point was that at least every time one of these things pops up, he's not raising his hand going, ooh, 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 for a payday and taking the easy money every time. I'm like, some of these dolts, I mean, that's all I was getting at. I mean, you know, it's... Here's a guy who clearly didn't save his money because he had to be making it at least, you know, low six figures in WWE at the time with Albert and X-Pac. So he didn't save his money. If he did, he wouldn't be working in Olive Garden. So we have every right to make fun of him for that. But I'm not going to goof on a guy. For... I mean, I'm not going to destroy the guy. Forget a job. I mean.
I would just like to see, I would like to see somebody like an old ECW guy, like, I am sure Mikey Whipwreck knows what he's up to, fucking Tajiri, I don't know, if Tajiri knows enough English, somebody who might not know what Justin Credible has been up to lately, but, well, okay, I don't fucking, who the fuck ever, fucking Elektra, I don't know, somebody who hasn't seen Justin Credible in a while and doesn't keep up on shit. I would love it if to overhear a conversation where Elektra is like, hey, Justin Credible, hey, where are you working this weekend? The garden. And she's like, ooh, Madison Square Garden. I want to hang out with him. And all the while, he's ready to fucking bring out your bread.
I can't take him in this living. Well, it could be worse. It could be a lecture in the parking lot of Target going to get a cart, and Shane Douglas comes waddling over going, I'll get that for you, ma'am.
Yeah,
so,
no shit. Some kid rolls up in the parking lot with his music blaring. He's like, cut the fucking music. I can't hear myself think out here.
It's like stopping at a stoplight and Mike Whipwreck running out to clean your window. Oh, Mahoney bolted the back window and Mikey takes
rough.
Yeah, no shit. Fucking
Bob. Bob just up. Using his own teacher. With the teacher, I'll clean your window, put it back on.
Jesus Christ.
He spits on your mirror to get a little spit shine and puts it back on. Holds an awful little hand that he has out and give him a quarter.
He tries to give it a spit shine, and when he spits, one of his nasty ass teeth comes out with it. Bing! Comes off your windshield.
Don't scratch the window. So we have to fix the window too. $500 a night, stupid.
Holy shit. Dixie, can I work your show? I need another tooth. Oh, fuck.
What was your mind about? I haven't seen my laptop died yet. I don't have it plugged in, so. It's just funny about Balls Mahoney. Yeah, so there we go. Oh, goddamn. But some of them are having a few matches because those fake teeth are expensive or something. Oh, damn it. Oh, God.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, he'll be there backstage grading Parmesan.
A Tommy Dreamer, a never ending pasta. Oh, dude, this shit writes itself.
Balls Mahoney better start picking up his phone. Then, false teaching costs upwards of $2,500 per arch.
Yeah. I looked that up, by the way. I wanted to be accurate.
Oh, my God. Very, very precise. Oh, okay. Maybe you won me over on the Jeff Incredible thing, but...
Okay. That line about the pasta bowl, dude, that's like... I shouldn't brag about that shit because it sounds tacky, but I put that up with my, wee, I'm going on the fly line.
Hey, what was that line about Dayton? You know what, there's a doof in Dayton? Is that how it started?
Say, what was it again?
That joke about Dayton. What is there to do in Dayton or something like that?
Oh, yeah, exactly. You know what the best part about Dayton, Ohio is? Or how did you say that? I played in Dayton, Ohio. You know what's fun to do in Dayton, Ohio? Pack up and get the fuck out of there.
You're boring. Apparently get jerked around for three, 4 weeks, drive an hour, and then go, well, there's no connection. Thanks for, it only happened after he was home.
Right.
So he couldn't go, well, then give me some gas money, bitch, because this was a waste of time.
No shit. Where was she from?
Cincinnati.
You know who won Miss Cincinnati last year? No one. There's no one pretty enough. Sorry, I'm trying to rip off Bob Keenan jokes. There's a guy named Joe changed his oil in town. He came in third. Well, anyway. Well, what else, man? I don't know. We've gone, this phone call, according to my phone, an hour 17. Minus fucking
those
around
off
there.
Those are the only two things I really wanted to talk about anyway, so we can wrap it up. That's fine.
Sure.
It's kind of a nothing show, but it was just...
Yeah.
Maybe I was just in a bad mood when you hit me up with that at work, because that line's pretty funny, you know?
Oh, just incredible. Jesus.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't think this has a chance to sell any buy rates. So I'm not too worried about it. So
yeah.
All right, we'll get the hell out of here. Everyone got their votes in finally. So I guess we should start plugging the first Stunt Granny Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Which is that,
indeed.
Is it too early?
I don't think
right.
so.
Well, we got our own.
Go ahead.
I don't know. I was going to say we got our own Hall of Fame thing working. This was a Dusty's brainy idea, and a good one that wouldn't supposed to come out that way.
So those, I think it comes up in August, if I remember right, because that's when it's our 2-year anniversary, which is frightening. So be on the lookout for that. That was actually, it was fun to see everyone's reaction, what they picked for everything, too. So hang tight for that, and then, I don't know, there's nothing else going on that I know of. So.
Yeah, like I said before, Dusty and I did a completely off-the-cuff, no planning involved whatsoever audio this last weekend, so if you haven't listened to that, check it out. I don't know what else we got coming up for the rest of the week other than I hope there's more ECW news coming out, because seriously, it's not busy time at work for me, and I get to post all this shit, and it's fun.
Yes. All right, well, I'm going to sign off. I'll give you the call, and I'll get out of here. So, everyone,
right.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you back next time. Get the hell out of here.
Cool. All right. For Jeremy Mays, for the rest of the Stunt Granny gang, for the guys from East Coast Audio, shout out, because we love you guys. And for Justin Credible, who needs some fucking bread and tuna and mayonnaise. And for my weekend, this is Eric Nelson. This has been another Stunt Granny Audio. Peace and chicken grease.